welcome to the NC Students Podcast. NC Students is the middle school and high school ministry of Northland Cathedral in Kansas City, Missouri. For more information on NC Students and Northland Cathedral, please visit www.northlandcathedral.org. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy this week's message.
We're going to be in Ephesians chapter 6, 10 through 18 for 4 weeks, including this week. So this is week one of four. Of course, we're going to have some special nights like Green Out Night and then Easter. So this is going to last a little bit because we'll have a week off of this and then we'll back on. So before I get into that story of what this is about, just thinking about this theme battle, and to be honest with you, I'm kind of jealous of your generation growing up when you're growing up. Heather and I took a date last week on our day off, which is Thursday. We're looking forward to another one tomorrow. Not a date because it's expensive to go to the movies. But last week we went and saw Black Panther. Good movie. Who's seen that movie? Great movie. Now listen, you guys are growing up, and whether you realize this or not, you're growing up in an incredible time with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, all right? I said that as nerdy as I could possibly say that because I'm not a comic book nerdy guy, but I like the comic book movies, that's for sure. So when I was a kid, Superman was kind of a thing, like late 70s, early 80s. They were pumping out movies. And then Batman became a thing with like Michael Keaton Batman and Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze. You guys ever seen those movies? Yeah, all right. And then there was the Dark Knight, Christian Bale Batman that happened. You guys are probably still little. You know what I realized is that Marvel thing that started with Iron Man in 2008, some of you were like three or four. So maybe you haven't seen all those Marvel movies, but they put a bunch out in the last decade. And I got to ask, I'm not going to even ask what your favorite is. I want to know, you got to vote between Iron Man and Captain America. Whoa. We're going to do this by the showing of hands. All right. Who says, time out. No, who would you want to be or who do you like better? And who was right when it came to Civil War? Oh. Iron Man.
Wait. Who is right or who is better?
Okay. Those are two separate. Who do you like more? That's not even who's better. Iron Man. Iron Man is genius. All right, okay, okay. And I mean, all right. Forget the poll. I don't even know. Okay.
America.
Raise your hand, Captain America.
Yeah. He was right, too.
All right. Okay. Out of all the superheroes and all their skills, think about it. Let me get the... Not that superhero. So of all the superheroes in the world and all their crazy powers, you have to have what to be a superhero? You have to have a villain. If there's no villain, it doesn't matter that Tony Stark could do all the cool things he does and Captain America could run from the law. It doesn't matter that he could do all that stuff. What matters is there's got to be something to oppose you and a villain. There's got to be someone. And listen, if you've seen Black Panther, I don't want to ruin the movie because not everyone raised their hand. That's a great villain. So complex villain. You almost feel bad and sympathetic. I was almost cheering for the villain. You have to have a villain. There has to be someone that's the bad guy, even if they're somewhat of a good guy or somewhat of a confused guy. But let me ask this question. What would a superhero be like if that villain was invisible? What would Thor do, or Captain America, or Spider-Man, or Superman, if you can't see, you can't throw, you can't aim, you can't punch an invisible villain? It'd be kind of hard, right? Invisibility is pretty cool. Like, I know Wonder Woman, I didn't see the newest Wonder Woman. Does she have an invisible plane? No, that's the old school Wonder Woman. But an invisible plane's cool, but an invisible enemy would be even harder. And that's exactly what we have as Christians, because the Bible says so. It doesn't talk a whole lot about it, but there's one section, guess what section? Ephesians chapter 6, that talks about an invisible enemy that we have to fight. And how in the world do we fight this? And before we get into this passage of scripture, let me just set everyone's heart at ease. This is a battle that takes place. There is an enemy, but it's not like God and Satan are like duking it out like equals in a ring. Who's going to win? Oh, no. Hope God wins. Like, God's going to win. As a matter of fact, he's already won. Like, everyone breathe easy. and say, "Woo, we're on the winning side." If you put your hope in Jesus, you're on the winning side. So there's no doubt about that. Now, while Satan has lost the war, he still wants to battle. He still wants to bring people down. He still wants to cause scars and mess things up. As a matter of fact, I would say that it started with Adam and Eve. Well, I wouldn't say that, but everyone says that. It started with Adam and Eve. Sin entered into the world, how? With deception, with a lie. And the enemy would like to deceive us, and would like to lie, would like to make us feel discouraged or defeated, even though we have the victory as Christians. Now, if you're not a Christian, victory is found in Jesus, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later, but if you are a Christian, listen, you've got the victory, but you can still live your life like you're defeated. You can still live your life like you're without any value, discouraged and distracted again. Okay, so listen, Ephesians chapter 6, Paul, like a lot of his letters, he's writing like doctrinal stuff, like this is the implications of the Christian faith. And then he ends like the last half of it, like a lot of his letters, saying this is what it means for the Christian life. This is application. This is living this out in everyday life. And he's about to say goodbye. He's about to say his goodbyes, literally, in this letter. But before he does that, he says one last thing. And this is where we're at. And he takes the imagery of Roman soldiers and their armor. Guess where we're going? And he says, he brings it to the Christian life. So listen to this verse, and we're going to be in this chapter for 4 weeks, or in this passage, these eight verses for 4 weeks. So today we're just going to take two of them. We're going to talk about this invisible enemy that we fight, and this that would want to keep us defeated. And chapter 6, starting in verse 10, "Finally, be strong in the Lord and the strength of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places." I kind of wish I called this Ghostbusters, but oh well, it's battle, right? Because he uses Roman army infantry like armor. But let me point out two things here. First of all, Paul says this, that we are armed with power. Verses 10 through 11, look at those again. Be strong in the Lord, not be strong in yourself, be strong and figure out how to be strong and make it happen. But be strong in the Lord and in his strength, the strength of his might. That God gives us power to stand. That alone I can't necessarily fight this battle, but with God's help as a believer, he's given me the strength to stand. The next part is this, that he's given us armor. Verse 11, put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. Some of your translations, if you're like in the NLT, probably says the strategies. ESV, the Greek word actually is schemes. Like the enemy is trying, he's trying to figure out a way to deceive, to lie, to trip us up. He may not have our soul, but he can make us distracted and discouraged and off mission of what Christ would have us do and be. Now, as far as this is concerned, the enemy, he'd like to tear us down. If you're not a Christian, he wants you not to be a Christian. He wants to hold that out as long as possible. And if you are a Christian, he'd sure like to trip you up. I'm not convinced that the enemy could actually make us reject faith, but he could make other things crazy in our life happen, and we could find ourselves far from God, and then at that point, we're vulnerable. But can I just say one thing about that? The danger about being far from God in your walk with him, like putting him off and putting him off and putting him off, is not really that he's going to change his mind about you. He says mind's made up because of Jesus if you put your trust in him. The danger is when you're far from God, you're more vulnerable to change your mind about him. So the enemy would like to trip us up for sure. Although he can't destroy us, he can really make life a mess. And the battleground is invisible. It's not like there's invisible armor for this invisible battle, and there's an invisible sword being sword. Wow. That's from Aladdin. 100 bad guys with swords, you know, right? There's not like an invisible spear that's flying through the air. It's a battlefield that happens in our heart and our mind. And we're going to see that as we go on with this armor. Keep reading with me. Verse 12. Verse 12 says this, "For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood," I've already read it, but I'm going to read it again, "but against rulers, against authorities, against cosmic powers, over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in heavenly places." Now, scholars can worry about trying to figure out all those categories and name them and describe them. But the point that Paul's making here, without trying to explain each of those descriptions, is that there is something that's going on. There is forces at work that rest and come from the enemy of our soul, come from Satan himself, that something is taking place. And I don't want to dig down into that because we could probably find ourselves there trying to define each of those terms, and it wouldn't get us anywhere. The point is, there's an enemy that's trying to discourage us, trying to lie to us, trying to deceive us. And you see that same language of Satan being the enemy in a number of places in Scripture. 1 Peter 5:8 calls him a lion. It says, "Beware, be on alert. The enemy is prowling around like a lion, seeking those he can devour." In the book of John, the Gospel of John, Satan's called a liar. In Revelation, he's called the deceiver. He's called an accuser. I wonder if I could look back at my life and like replay it, how many times I've believed something to be so true that was actually a lie. And I'm afraid sometimes in youth ministry, or maybe even as a parent, we look at the actions that people take, or as Christians, and we say, what were they thinking when they took that action? And we try to address that action. We try to address, you know, going out and partying, looking at something on the internet we're not supposed to be looking at, going out and getting drunk, crossing the line physically with a guy, whatever it may be. But those actions are just not actions that just happen out of nowhere. Let me teach you something that you've probably heard me say before, but behind every what, whether it's getting wasted, crossing the line physically, whether it's jealousy and gossip, all the whats that exist, behind every what, there's a why. And when you begin to kind of ask what that why is, why would you go do that? The thing that you thought you would never do, why would you make that decision? If someone's forced to answer the question why, sometimes it reveals that there's a lie that they believe. Why did you cross the line and go that far with your boyfriend? Well, I'm afraid if I don't, he won't love me. That's your thinking. But the lie that you believe is that your value and your worth is what you can give physically and not a thing else. Like you're without value except for that. That's a lie that people believe. Why'd you go out and do that with your friends when, man, I know you didn't intend to do that, but, well, I'm afraid I would miss out and my friends would reject me. Your lie being that you're believing is my value becomes based on their acceptance. So the enemy wants to put lies in there. Behind every what is a why, behind every why is a lie. Those lies are things like you're not valuable, you're not lovable, you're a failure, you're always that guy, you are broken. And we all have lies. I have lies that I believe about myself. And quite honestly, one of the biggest statements about what I believe about God is what I say is true of me. Because when I tell you what's true of me, I tip my hand about who I think God is. And so while we have victory because of Jesus on the cross, we can live this life very defeated as if we don't. And the enemy, I believe, likes it that way because it takes us off mission. It takes us off of why we exist. We're just barely making it to heaven and not changing and impacting this world. I've already said that the enemy wants to distract us, discourage us, make us feel defeated. So if it's true, this point, did I even make that point? I didn't make the point. This is the one point I want you guys to have, because I'm off my notes anyway. There is a real enemy. He really exists. It's the previous slide. And while he is defeated, you can't take him lightly. It's not word for word what's on the screen. Don't worry about it. He is defeated, but you can't just ignore that fact. Now, there are people who like get really freaked out and there's the devil behind everything. And there's people who are like, well, if God wanted me to worry about the enemy, then maybe he would let me see him. He wouldn't be invisible. But the truth is there's a healthy middle ground where there's a real enemy. Yeah, he's defeated so I can have confidence. But at the same time, he still deceives. He still lies. He still just makes us feel defeated and distracted. So there's kind of this middle ground where you find confidence, but yet you have to be alert. You got to be alert. And part of the reason that the armor of God is not physically armor, but it's about being alert and about being aware, being close to God, walking in relationship with him. And the things that we're going to talk about over the next few weeks. I don't want to talk about what's going to happen in the next few weeks. We will talk about it in the next few weeks. But we can live with the confidence of victory, but the reality that there is an enemy who wants to deceive and destroy. And he may not take your soul, but he could take your witness. He may not take your soul, but he could take your joy. He might not take your soul, but he could convince you that you're so right when you're really not. Convince you that you're acting godly and righteous in your anger, and you're really not. I know this because it's my story. If you let your guard down, what you find is that he takes advantage of those things, and we kind of grow up with scars. Some of you guys, high schoolers, know some of these scars. Those moments where I'm not on guard, and those moments I'm not alert, and the enemy lies, and I believe the enemy. Listen, I believe this. If we can live on being alert, that there's a real enemy, he's not going to win ultimately, but he could sidetrack us. He could discourage us. He could make us walk this life defeated and barely making it. If we could really live, put on the armor of God, which we're going to talk about in the next few weeks, which I'm not going to go into detail here, I think we could walk most days as Christians feeling a sense of victory more than defeatedness. I think we could walk as Christians more days and feel joy and security than shame and regret. I think we could walk more days shining brightly because we're confident in who we are in Christ. We could bounce back from those moments where we fail, we make bad choices, instead of staying down. How many of you guys, like me, if you mess up, the last thing you want to do is get back up because you feel like you should stay down for a little bit longer before you dare get back up again? I would almost venture to say that if we could really put on the armor of God, what we'll talk about in the next few weeks, perhaps we actually fall just a little less than we do normally. Let me close with this, and the band's going to come back up. This is just an intro sermon, but I encourage you to be back for these next few weeks, because when we begin to talk about the schemes and the strategies of the enemy and the power and the armor of God that he's given us to withstand the attack, it's a little bit like a quarterback standing there. If you're a football guy, or even if you're a fan, or even if you've never watched it, you probably know who Tom Brady is, right? So a quarterback stands behind an offensive line. He doesn't have armor. Actually, he does have armor, really, but he has a whole bunch of guys that are his armor. And he surveys the defense. And if he's good at surveying the defense, he can see what's coming. And he knows that there's vulnerability on this side or this side. He knows that this may happen or this may happen. And so a quarterback will call an audible. He'll change the play up to make sure that his armor, his offensive lineman, his running back, the tight end who's chipping, whatever it may be, are in the right place so he can stand with confidence and do what God's called him to do. Not what God's called him to do, but what his coach has told him to do. But in a very similar way, I believe when we could stand with confidence, when we put on the armor of God and we stand with confidence, we can do what God's called us to do. See, I lived a lot of my teenage life just kind of like, oh God, if I just make it to heaven somehow, it'll be a miracle because my life is a mess. And I don't know that I stayed alert. I don't know that I did some of the things we're going to talk about over these next few weeks when it comes to putting the armor of God on. But I lost opportunity to be light in the halls of my school. I lost opportunity to live consistently like I wanted to, because the enemy would feed me lies. My deepest beliefs, they affect the way I think, they affect my emotions, and ultimately they flesh out in my actions. The devil's good. He's not going to attack your actions. He's going to attack just a little seed. He doesn't have to force you to make bad choices. He's put a little seed in your deepest beliefs, and that thing grows, and you make those choices for him. I mean, really. I hope you're here the next 3 weeks of this series. And I know that's going to be not exactly 3 weeks. It's going to be like Easter and all this other stuff. Put on the armor of God and stand. One last story. In 2 Chronicles chapter 20, the kingdom of Judah is divided. Israel divides. Judah and Israel, they're separate kingdoms now. And there's a king named Jehoshaphat, or Jehoshaphat. Jumping Jehoshaphat. He's like, woohoo! And the Amorites and the Mennonites, and some other knight that I can't remember right now, they march out to war against Judah, and Jehoshaphat is told of this, and he's like, we can't defeat them. So he calls for a fast, people from Judah come, and they pray, they seek in God's face, and he stands in the assembly of the people staying there at the temple, and he prays, God, blah, 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 here's who you are, here's what you've done. This is beyond us. We don't have the strength to do this. And he goes, we don't know what to do, God, but our eyes are on you. And the answer from God is this. He says, here's what you're going to do. don't fear and don't worry, because the battle's not yours, it's God's. It's God's strength. It's God's might. It's God's armor for us. He said, I want you to get up tomorrow. I want you to march out to the battlefield, and I want you to stand up tall, and I want you to stand there and watch what God will do. They put their armor on, and they stood, and God fought the battle. They didn't fight. The truth is, it's God's victory. It's God's battle. He's already won the victory. But there's something that we need to do that's obedience. Something that we need to do, be faithful to what he's told us to do. And what he's told us to do is to put on his armor and stand in his strength.